We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Now that you've had a week to give thanks, it's time to hate thy neighbor to the south.
Quit shopping. Go watch football.
This is a Pac-12 Championship Week edition of Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Visit Allen Webb Mitsubishi in the Vancouver Auto Mall or online at allenwebbmitsubishi.com.
Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
All right, hour number two, Dusty and Cam in the Morning, coming up this hour, very heavy on Oregon and Utah. We'll talk about the Ducks and the Utes down in Santa Clara at 7:15. Fox Sports analyst Joel Klatt will join us at 7:30 for a breakdown of that game and the rest of the games around conference championship weekend in college football. Weekend, would you rather? At the top of next hour, I saw an article during the break about what's on the line for coaches in conference championship weekend. My goodness, just by winning conference championship games, Ed Orgeron can win can make $425,000 in bonuses. Ryan Day can make $350,000. Dabo Swinney, Kirby Smart, each making $300,000. Kyle Whittingham can make $268,000 and Lincoln Riley $225,000 just by winning over the weekend.
It's good incentive.
Oh, I love my goodness.
I think incentives. Pros have incentives. Professionals, they are professional coaches. Collegiately.
Hey, this game's all about the kids, though, Dabo.
Hey, because you know those coaches, they'd be prepped right.
Hey, Dabo Swinney, never forget, he said he'll walk away if it becomes about the money for kids.
Yep. It's a daggum mistake.
$92 million.
He gets $300,000 if those kids win today or tomorrow. Dabo Swinney.
You can throw a heck of a party with $300,000 for those guys.
My gosh.
That's what I would do.
You mean the pizza party that he has?
Yeah, I know. That was a little bad.
He had a pizza party.
But guys, they have a slide.
They do have a slide.
No, that is fun. That is neat. Oh, gosh. Hey, but don't you dare try to transfer either. Mm-hmm. Remember Kelly Bryant when he tried to block the transfer and then he got the backlash and was like, okay, I guess I should probably let him transfer. Yeah. All right, we'll have a lot of more on these games. I'm looking up Mario Cristobal wasn't included in the USA Today article because it's about the coaches that could make the college football playoff. But I'll look up Mario Cristobal's bonuses because I know his contract, his base pay is not amongst the tops in the country or the Pac-12, but it is very incentive-laden, and I know he's already made a handful of doughs on the incentive so far, and I'm assuming winning the Pac-12 championship is something that he'll cash in on as well.
Yeah, good questions that you guys did, too. There's a couple other I'd love to get to later in the show, but there's some really good questions, and thanks for all those texts, too. But you're right. Incentive-based business. We talked about Oregon and the players being incentivized to win a championship. Mm-hmm. Don't you think college football is an incentive-based business for coaches?
It absolutely is.
So what
100%
is.
Like,
right. So what is the incentive for the players?
To get to an incentive-based business.
Thank you.
I mean, that's all
when
it is.
When you walk in to Oregon and walk into Oregon State and Washington State and UW up here in the Pacific Northwest, your incentive is to get one place and one place only. What is it? It's the NFL.
NFL. No, it's not. Cam, I've been told it's about getting my education.
It's not.
And getting a good job.
Okay, 1 out of 10 of those guys in there sit in that room when they first show up as freshmen. Know they're going to be in the NFL. Now, the reality sets in later in their careers, but that's what the incentive is, and that's what every coach is going to do. When Coach Cristobal walks in there, he's going to tell you, hey, you know that Penei Sewell guy? He's the best offensive lineman in the country. You come and play for me, I will make you the best offensive lineman in the country. That's every pitch, and why wouldn't you do that? It's what you do.
55305, the better you today, text line. Joel Klatt, 7:30, Utah, Oregon, preview, 7:15. Right now, though, it is 7:04.
What's hot?
Who can?
What's hot and why is it cool?
Stay cool, go
hot and cool with Dusty and Cam. Your morning dose of positivity ripped from the headlines.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
The Portland Trail Blazers return to action tonight in Moda Center, hosting the Los Angeles Lakers. A 7:30 tip on ESPN, where the big story of the night will be Banana Boat Buddies, LeBron James, Carmelo Anthony reuniting and feeling so good.
Oh, really?
Fluff piece after fluff piece after fluff piece will be done about Melo LeBron's relationship.
Oh. I'm actually more interested in their sons.
Melo's son?
No, the other two
Melo
sons.
Melo have a son?
Doesn't he have sons?
I think he just has a daughter.
Oh, I thought he had a son.
You're thinking Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade.
LeBron's kids play together at Sarah
Canyon.
That's what I meant.
I meant D. Wade's and his son. They play at something. What's
Sarah
the name?
Sarah Canyon.
Sierra Canyon?
Or is it just Sarah?
Is it Sarah Canyon?
Okay. Sarah Canyon down in Southern California.
I saw this morning on Twitter that today is the 9-year anniversary of the iconic alley-oop dunk between D-Wade and LeBron.
The picture where
D-Wade stretched out looking at the camera and LeBron's about to finish the alley-oop.
Yeah,
that's a badass picture.
Nine years ago today.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool. Maybe D-Wade will be in town too.
You never know. Maybe they'll try to toss one up to Carmelo.
Those two little princes playing with each other.
Maybe Chris Paul will get a night off and D-Wade and
that didn't sound good.
CP3 will sit on a banana boat courtside waiting for the other two to jump on. You're as cold as ice. Former Oregon offensive coordinator, now head coach at Fresno State, Jeff Tedford is stepping away from the program. Bruce Feldman reporting that it is due to health complications that he's been having. He's saying that it is a pretty serious thing. He had to step away from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because of health issues, and that's when Marcus Arroyo took over play calling duties for the Bucs.
This reminds me of, you remember Jerry Krill from Minnesota?
Kill.
And he then went to Rutgers and had to step away.
Yeah, Caesars.
That was pretty tough situation. So you wish whatever coach is dealing with, Coach Tedford, smart offensive mind, that's hard to be able to step away from that.
Yeah, it is. And apparently, if you are a Fresno State fan, Kalen DeBoer is the leading candidate for that job. He is the offensive coordinator at Indiana. So with Tedford stepping down, 26-14 at his alma mater in three seasons, ranked 18th in the country last year. Apparently, a bidding war will begin between the Angels and the Yankees over the services of ace pitcher Garrett Cole. Upwards of $250 million. Could be doled out.
He's going to the Yankees. Why? If you mean to tell me that you'd go to the Los Angeles Angels or the Yankees, who you picking?
Well, he's from LA.
It doesn't matter.
I mean, maybe he will,
but how many more times do we get to see the Angels perennially pay everybody yet be subpar?
I don't know, they
don't even make the playoffs. They have Mike Trout.
Yeah. They do have Mike Trout. Well, maybe that's why they're going to have to go overpay to get Garrett Cole. But Yankees ownership,
they're going to have $1 billion in two players.
Yankees ownership
has said they've
given the green light to going whatever contract you want to offer Cole, go get it. Green light it. Brian Cashman, hand out that cash, man.
Oh, man. Good. Yeah. Who's his agent? Who's Garrett Cole's agent?
Isn't it Boris?
Fitz Scott Boris again. That guy is.
Isn't that who told him to put on take off his Astros hat and put on a blank hat after they lost Game 7 of the World Series when he
Smart
said, I'm
man.
Not an employee of the Astros anymore? World Series champion Nationals, their owner Mark Lerner, according to this report from ESPN, says the team can't keep both Steven Strasburg and Anthony Rendon.
Oh.
I mean,
why? Because you don't want to spend it?
He told NBC Sports Washington in an interview, we really can afford one of those two guys.
Which one
They're
do you
huge
keep?
Numbers. We already have been a really large payroll to begin with.
Well, because he's you don't want to keep second baseman? I'm sorry, Rendon?
Yeah, Anthony Rendon.
Second baseman? Or you want to keep a top pitcher? Which one do you want? Which one is more valuable?
I would go with Steven Strasburg, but the
injury. I would also go with pitching.
The injury. He's third baseman. The injury
third
history.
Third baseman. Yeah, third baseman.
Injury history concerns me with Strasburg.
Yeah, Rendon had a hell of a. I mean, he was incredible. He had a hell of a playoff run. He got himself going to get a lot of money.
Make that money, man.
I always go with pitching.
I would too. I would too. 31-24 was the final on Thursday Night Football. Dup. Bears beat the Cowboys in a game that really wasn't even that close. Mitch Trubisky, is he back to being good?
Okay. Well, they're 4 in a row now? They're 4 in a row?
I think it's four in a row. Four?
I think it's 3 in a row and 4 of the last 5.
Four of the last five.
The defense, remember, Mitch Trubisky did have a good night last night. He went 23 of 31, 244, 3 touchdowns, and an interception. But for every great throw that he made, he thread the needle a couple times. That interception was horrific in the red zone. And that's, you sit there and you go, that is
that
Mitch
Trubisky.
That
was a hell of a pick, though. That was a crazy good pick. That was a stupid good pick.
But Trubisky can make drop some dimes that you just go, okay, I can see where it is. And then he had a hell of a game with his legs. 10 carries, 63 yards, and a touchdown
there. Because, making plays with your legs is not important.
Not important.
Not important. You should just stand in the pocket all the time. I mean, there are people that think that out there. Can you believe that?
Also, let's not forget, and this is the reason why I picked the Bears in the NFL Challenge yesterday. 3 defensive starters out for the Cowboys last night.
Yeah.
3 of them. Yeah. That's huge, including Leighton Vander Esch. The Pac-12 championship game is tonight. Ducks, Utes, down in Levi Stadium in Santa Clara, California. Our coverage on The Fan starts at noon with the Mario Cristobal Coaches Show leading up to Ducks game day, 1 to 3 o'clock. Anthony Newman and myself, Jerry, Jorgie, Joey, and now John's, because Buck has complained about it, from 3 to 5 leading you up to a 5 o'clock kick. It doesn't get much bigger than this for the Oregon Ducks. A Rose Bowl is on the line, and we will break it down next. We could see one of the best matchups between an offensive and defensive lineman in quite some time. Dustin Cam on The Fan. All right, 7:14 on The Fan, Dusty Hera.
Good Cam Lord, I couldn't even go take a pee.
No, just go in your pants, man. Just go now.
Did I ever tell you about the story about the guy that said he wore Depends to the rock concerts because he felt like he didn't want to go to the bathroom because he got right down in the front row, and he said, I don't want everyone to lose my spot. So he just wore adult diapers and said, I went to a concert and I don't want to have, it's going to be 5-6 hours. It's going to go in the pants.
That is the most disgusting thing.
It's not, because Elton John just admitted that he does it at his concerts.
Well, he's like 80, so he's around that age, right? How old is Sir Elton?
70s?
Sir Elton John is 70-something.
He's
getting up there.
You mean to tell me
he's getting to diaper age?
If you got
72.
70s. If you had front row shot to your favorite band,
mm-hmm.
but if you had to go to the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't put some Depends on and just be like, deal with it. I'll just deal with it.
Mm-mm.
Oh, I'd sign me up.
No, I wouldn't do that.
It's super extra absorbent.
I'm not sitting in my filth.
Your kids do.
What? Well, not both potty trained.
Well, but I know, but they did.
But they did.
But they
did. They're children. They didn't know any better.
But when we get old,
as an adult,
we do
I know better.
But we're old adults. We do the same thing. You just said it's old. So what's the difference?
Yeah, I know.
You just lose bodily function?
That's right. And you lose it. If you can control it, you can control it, man.
Well, Saragusa used to tell me to guard my manhood with his man covers.
And then was it Robin Big? Did you ever watch the show Adventures in Hollywood? That was with the 3-6 Mafia crew, but then you had Robin Big, and Big had his man pawn that he would put in. Just in case accidents happen, man. Make sure you have one.
If it was a concert, if it was me, if it was if you got to go back in time or anything, or if I had to watch if it was my great bands that I want to be, just throw one on.
I'm not going to judge you if you do it, but it's not for me, man. Yeah. It's not for me.
What if you had lost your spot?
That's fine.
Then you had to go all the way in the back row. You had the front spot.
Yeah, I'd
and
make
Mark
it worth
Wahlberg
it.
Was going to hand you the mic like he did
with the Funky
Rockstar.
Bunch.
What about just drinking less so you don't have to pee?
No, you got to have beverages while you're down there, don't you? Buck, you wouldn't put a diaper on if it was a concert, a six-hour concert?
I mean, is the
concert?
Music going to sound the same from 20 rows back? Probably.
It's a six-hour concert?
It's the front row. It's like a festival.
I don't really want to sit in my own pee. I kind of don't want to.
Okay. Judges.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
I didn't say go number two in the pants. I just said there's no number twos.
Yeah.
No number twos.
Still, I don't want to sit in my pee either. Right. You know? Okay. I mean, I'm not going down that road. Hey, speaking of wet pants, it's going to rain a lot at the Pac-12 championship game today. Segway. Ducks, Utah, tonight, 5 o'clock, Levi Stadium in Eugene. If you're going there, they have plenty of bathrooms, I've heard, so and there won't be anybody there, so you don't have to worry about long lines.
It's an open-air stadium.
So you don't have to worry about
a rector set.
You know, waiting in line for a bathroom. You can get your seat right back there.
I would like to grade Levi Stadium as the most underwhelming stadium in the country.
Really?
I would give it that high grade. Buck, what say you?
Until the Niners got good.
No, it's the most underwhelming stadium in the country.
It's just boring. It's vanilla.
It's underwhelming.
It is C grade.
And that was the cool thing about old school stadiums is that they had character to them. Like, you have to have something unique about your stadium. Like, baseball's doing a great job with this.
But that's
their
the
new
biggest
ballparks.
Thing that Levi's lacks is that character.
No character.
The amenities, they're fine. Yeah. The concourses, they're wide. The bathrooms, you don't wait very long.
I heard the Wi-Fi is great.
That people want.
Charging
but that's
stations.
Not what makes a game good there. You know, that just keeps people happy when they're getting their concessions and going to the bathroom.
Make it aesthetically pleasing. Okay. I've heard it is very underwhelming, but I think any stadium's great if you have a raucous crowd.
Yeah, right? Because the Sunday night game or the Monday night game with the Seahawks? Oh. It sounded good. It looked good on TV, but that was the crowd creates energy.
They said it was electric.
But I was there last year, and it was...
And that's what's going to suck about what we have tonight is that we're going to have one of the best matchups that I think we've seen between an offensive lineman and a defensive lineman. You've got Penei Sewell, who Pro Football Focus has the Pac-12 Player of the Year, and he's going to be squaring off with Bradley and I of Utah sometimes, right? The 6'3", 265-pound senior who is a pass rush machine tonight. And I hope that we get those two guys squaring out because Anai is listed as a left end, and obviously Penei Sewell, left tackle, they'll be playing on opposite sides of each other a lot. But do you, like, we're going to be seeing one of the best matchups when those two guys go against each other. That's like the SEC matchups where you see first round pick versus first round pick. These two dudes are ballers. And I love that in a game like this, we're going to have that.
So in the two games that I can use to measure up, let's start with what Auburn did at the end of the game to the Ducks. The Ducks could push very well with their offensive line. In fact, the offensive line's been very good at it. They did it to Washington. They went down and did it at Stanford. They did it to USC. So they leaned on you multiple parts of the game, but they ran the football very well, and they didn't have to get in a come-from-behind game, which you had to at ASU because you didn't get up on the board quickly. Now, there is a style, and I could use the comparison, the style of what Schottenheimer and Pete Carroll love to do at Seattle, which is play close to your vest. They want to run the football first, and they want to be in a game that keeps it kind of mediocre, but then they find a way to win the end. That's the kind of offense that Oregon wants to run. It's quite obvious that when that pistol zone and some of the things they do in their quick screens, their best play, in my opinion, is their short little quick screens, what they have out on the perimeter, because their offensive line are athletic and their receivers can block. That's their advantage. Utah is also going to lean on you like they've never been before, because they're going to lean on you on the defensive line. You're not going to push around this defensive line. Just like Oregon couldn't push around Auburn at the end of the game, they physically got beat a little bit towards the end, and that was the fatigue factor setting in because these guys are big, physical, and strong. This game is going to be won and lost. Every time the narrative is going to be winning it in the trenches. This game is going to be very critical between the offensive line of Oregon and the defensive line of Utah. That is the game
and
tonight.
Take into consideration, too, the elements being a factor in that as well. I mean, if you look at the fact that it's supposed to get, an 0.8 inches, so
don't
almost a full
inch, of rain,
inch
yeah.
of rain, and winds
muddy,
will be
sloppy.
Howling. It will be a run-first game, and this may be the first game since that Auburn game that Oregon has not had a clear advantage on both fronts and in both lines because – look, it's probably a stalemate between Oregon's offensive line and Utah's defensive line. And you probably have a stalemate on the other side of the ball as well, because although Utah's offensive line is seen as not as good as their defensive front, so is Oregon's. I mean, Oregon's defensive line isn't seen as equal to their O-line. you have stalemates on both sides of the ball right there. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is on the other side where you have the or can Oregon's defensive line put that pressure on the two freshmen and a mm-hmm. sophomore and wear them down on the opposite side of the ball, because that is where they like to kill teams, is controlling the clock and wearing you down. If you saw what Arizona State did to Oregon, it was they kept the ball out of Justin Herbert's hands until the fourth quarter. And when Herbert got the ball in his hands a lot more, what, look at what they did. They just marched down the field and they did it quickly.
Yeah, the other thing, so the 1A is the up front, is the offensive line of certainly of Oregon and the D-line of Utah. But I do think that the struggling, a little bit of a struggle for the secondary of Utah, this is going to be the best secondary they face. Oregon Ducks. This is going to be by far the best secondary they face. The defense is very, very good. They are fast, they are long, they're aggressive, and they're smart. So if this game does turn into a muck it up mud fest, which it sure typically it's going to look like that, if you can't run it with CJ and if Justin Herbert's going to stand in the pocket the entire game, what do you have left to do? What do you have left to do? You got to get on the perimeter to both Johnsons. You have to find a way to get them the football, and you're going to face guys that are come up and bump and run, and I guarantee you every single one of those cornerbacks and those safeties are going to come up and be physical. They're going to try to do it early, and they're going to force Justin to get out of the pocket. They're going to try to do it. Now, whether they do it or not, but this is going to have to be one of those pinpoint games, and in bad conditions on TV for the national stage, you're going to put it in your number one player's hands. I want Justin to go get it, man, because Tyler Hunt's going to have the same pressure. He's going to feel the same thing. What is the Oregon, what is their game plan going to be on defense? Because right now they're giving up points.
And that's the thing that makes it so tough, is that if it's going to be 20 to 30 mile an hour winds, like I've seen 10 to 12, anywhere from 10 to 12 mile an hour winds, all the way up to 20 to 30 mile an hour gusts. The wind will affect the passing game. And you mentioned the bringing up the safeties and the corners up to play that press coverage and that bump and run. Like, that takes away your screen game, and you're going to have to push the ball downfield, and how hard that is to push the ball downfield for balance when it's windy out. You know, that could be the big equalizer there. And what do defenses do? I mean, if you're sitting there going, man, they can't beat us deep because they can't throw the ball down the field because it's 30-mile-an-hour winds, of course you're going to bring everybody up closer, and that is a clear advantage for Utah because they got NFL dudes on all three levels of that defense.
Yep.
Every single level's got it. And how do you, like, this is the legit question, is how does Oregon get the ball downfield and keep them honest then? If it's windy, rainy, and just terrible conditions.
Who are Oregon's playmakers on offense? It starts with Justin Herbert. It's Johnny Johnson. Typically, it's going to be CJ Verdell. Those three guys have to be highly involved in the game plan. Highly involved in the game plan. And Utah knows it. It doesn't matter. At some point in time, you got to match up guys on guys. On the offensive wise, it's going to be Tyler Huntley and Zach Moss. Those guys are going to just pound you over and over again. That's what they're going to do. No questions with it.
And I will say, though, everything that we're talking about, Oregon's offense and the struggles that they may have, Utah looks far different with Andy Ludwig in the offense there.
It's a big change.
But they want to do the exact same things that Oregon does, right? And so they're banged up at receiver. You know, their two best receivers this year aren't playing in tonight's game. They're going to be without their two leading receivers. And that helps Oregon to do the exact same things on their defense, to bring those guys up, play them closer to the box, and hopefully you can commit more to the run because it starts and stops with Moss and Huntley. We've got Joel Klatt. Get his thoughts on this game. He works for Fox Sports, college football analyst. He's got a big weekend ahead of him, conference championship weekend. And how does he feel about one Paul Finebaum? Next, this is 1080 The Fan. Here's Buck with SportsCenter.
It's time for Fox's top college football analyst.
Flat with a play action, going to go long, and he's got a man there.
The inside story on college football without the SEC homerism.
I'm going to get it like a bull in a china shop.
This is Fridays with Klatt, part of Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Can you find out if Dalton Ferguson was named after Dalton from Roadhouse?
I'm not going to do that.
Thanks, Joel.
Sorry.
Appreciate you.
Brought to you on the Fan by 808, the Titan of Hawaiian restaurants.
All right, it's the perfect lead-in for Joel Klatt this weekend. college football without the SEC homerism. And boy, did we get some SEC homerism this week.
Oh, boy.
How about that Paul Feinbaum there, Joel?
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I couldn't help myself. You know, I'm a little snarky on social media anyways, and I was in a mood, and I thought, you know, he probably should get called out for this.
Nobody cares, Joel. Nobody cares about football east of the west of the Mississippi.
Nobody. No. Not nobody. The whole country.
Right. The whole country doesn't care.
I speak for the whole country after writing a book called My Conference is Better Than Yours.
Dear Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's make the case for Utah then. Utah and Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game tonight. They stood at fifth, and I thought it was interesting that Rob Mullen said that their wins have been dominant, so style points have mattered towards the committee. Do they have a case?
They're not supposed to, by the way. You know that.
Right. But do they have a case over Oklahoma?
I think it's, you know, I think that this is a tough one, guys. It really is. And I've gone back and forth about the team that I would be pounding the table for. Listen, Utah's been really good. Really good. 8 straight wins by an average of 29. That's the dominance that Rob was speaking of. You know, when they have Huntley and Moss, they're really good. Their defense is solid. Their only loss was when Moss was out for 3 quarters. Now, that tends to lose a little luster when you realize that Slovis didn't play from USC, right? I mean, he was out and knocked out after the first couple of plays of that game. But I got to tell you, like, I want to remain consistent. I don't want to be one of these guys that one year argues for one thing and the next year argues for another, because I think that we see that in my industry quite a bit. And so, I get, like, people on the West Coast are not going to like this, but I've been really consistent about arguing for 2 things: conference championships, and then, like, the resume. Who have you beat? You know, like, what? Tell me what your resume states. And Oklahoma's resume, guys, if they win, is just better than Utah's. It really is. And you can't extrapolate out that Oklahoma wouldn't have been as dominant against the schedule that Utah played, right? And I get it, right? Like, OU's not a great team. I don't know if Utah is either, but at least Oklahoma has one more Power 5 opponent. At least they have beaten a team that is ranked. 2 of them so far, chance for a 3rd on Saturday. Utah hasn't beaten 1. They've only played 1 ranked team. They lost. So as much as I think Utah is really good, I'd love to see them in the playoff. I think I'm going to have to argue for Oklahoma based on the merits of their season versus the merits of what Utah has done. I think that teams should be, let's just put it this way. Yeah. I really do believe that teams should be penalized for not scheduling Power 5 opponents in the non-conference.
Okay, that's fair.
Well, Joel, with that said, can you get, truthfully with me, I know you always are, rematches in college football. We have 2 division games in the NFL. Where do you stand with a rematch? I mean, if, because you've argued this, and I know you to the core, will say the regular season matters. This is no longer the regular season. This is a rematch. So if I'm Ohio State, do I really need to prove yet again how much better I am than Wisconsin, or Oklahoma prove yet again the regular season game? And now, this isn't regular season. This is a championship. How do you use this again with rematches? We're going to see Cincinnati and Memphis, who just played last week. Where are we with college football with that?
Well, I think that it's a problem when you're not forcing teams to win their conference in order to go. You know, because let's face it, LSU and Ohio State can probably lose and still go to the playoffs.
Yes.
So now you're making these games and these quote-unquote rematches unimportant. In fact, in my game, I hate to tell you guys, I don't know if the result of this game matters at all. I think Wisconsin should go to the Rose Bowl regardless, and Ohio State should go to the playoff regardless in the current system. But the way that I have argued for, and I think I've told you guys about it, I would do away with divisions, first of all, because I think that's what leads to a lot of the inequities as far as schedule goes within conferences, much less across conferences. I would do away with divisions, have more of a round-robin style of schedule within league play, and then pit the top 2 seeds against each other in the conference championship game. And then at that point, I would say you have to win that game in order to go. Then you would have what, you know, let's just example this year, all these games. LSU would have to win. Ohio State would have to win. It would create so much more urgency around these championship games. It would be more valuable. And what I would love about it, it would be a de facto quarterfinal game. So everyone's arguing for grow, expand, access. Well, this is exactly what you would get, is that you would get 10 teams in the Power Five playing a conference championship game, and you would retain the importance of the regular season by at least throwing one of them out and only including four. I think that's the best system. I don't get a lot of people don't agree with me on that. They either want to expand or not touch it. But I just think that prerequisite of having to win your conference would fix exactly what you're talking about.
Joel Klatt is our guest, Fox Sports College football analyst. He'll be on the call with Gus Johnson and Jenny Taft of the Big Ten Championship tomorrow, 5 o'clock Pacific time. So you said you wanted to go round robin. So would you be for then expanding the Power Five conferences to where each division played a round robin schedule then? And then
no,
the two divisions?
I don't like divisions. In fact, I think we
you
need
would make
to,
more.
I think we need to cut out some of these quote unquote Power Five schools. I would reduce the number of quote unquote Power Five schools. I mean, if I had my perfect scenario, it wouldn't be 65, it would be 60, and I would have six quote unquote conferences of 10. And then everyone would have to play each other, and I could build your non-conference schedule for you based on where you finished the previous season. It would be very simple, and it would be, quite frankly, more valuable, and they would grow the revenue, but they're not going to do that because of conference presidents, really. I should say university presidents. The biggest problem that college football faces is the lack of insight and overall knowledge of the sport that university presidents have. They have held college football back to a degree that is unquestionably the worst of any other sport out there. University presidents, as it's concerned to college athletics, are the dumbest people in the room.
Well, because of their academics. I mean, they're in they live in the academic world. They don't live. A lot of them don't even live or care to live in the athletic realm. So you're 100% correct, and I don't think a lot of people really understand that when they think of how much power university presidents have to vote teams
way
in and out
power.
And make decisions.
I want to
way
flip,
too much power.
I want to flip to questions about coaching a little bit. Chris Peterson leaves. Jeff Tedford's going to leave with personal reasons. We've now, Urban Meyer has left. We're going to see a lot of jobs open. Certainly guys are going to get rehired and fired. I mean, talk about the change or a little bit. What do you think it is about college football? And is it that the fact that these coaches can leave because it's financial, or is it the stress, just how much more responsibility with the recruiting and the different deadline, or is just what we expect from college football is more turnover?
Yeah, I think it's a confluence of a lot of those things. I think that guys are getting paid more now than they ever have. So you only really need like a 3-4-5 year run at a good school, and you're going to make now, you know, $3.5 million at a minimum in a Power Five job at most of these schools. So you're talking about, you know, making $15 to $20 million over a 5 year period. Most people sit there, they can probably put $8 to $9 million in the bank, you know, seven minimum. And then they're like, you know what? I'm pretty good. I'm 55. You know, this should last me quite a long time. So financially, certainly there's those reasons. Cam, there's also the fact that we have extended the recruiting calendar, and every coach hates it.
Yeah.
Hates it.
Yeah.
So they can't stand recruiting all year long, much less the type of kid that you're having to recruit now versus what you did, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, 10 years ago even, in the age of social media and how much you have to cater to these 15, 16, 17, and 18-year-old kids who haven't proven anything. Coaches hate it. They can never say it publicly, but when I get them behind closed doors and I'm like, how's recruiting going? They all just sink their heads and they're like, it's the worst. Recruiting sucks. So I think a lot of guys get driven out that way. And then also the stress and the pressure of the job, which has always been there. So when you combine those three things, you know, they sit there and they're like, what am I doing? Why am I giving myself a heart attack? I've got $10 million in the bank. I'm going to go right off into the sunset. And more power to them. You know, if that's what they can achieve, then go get it.
So with that, USC, how sexy is that job? And how does Clay Helton still keep that job?
That's an interesting one. I think that there was a lot of things going on there. I think that one of the issues that you've also got to realize, guys, is one of the reasons why they had this off the beaten path candidate get the AD job and Mike Bone is in large part due to the fact that a lot of the more qualified candidates looked at the financial situation of what a potential coaching change might mean, and they thought to themselves, I'm not going to go subject myself to that type of scrutiny of trying to make a coaching change on a Costco budget. You know, maybe that's the wrong analogy, you know, on a Kmart budget or whatever it is. And it's not to disparage that, but you know what I'm saying, right? It's not, it's not the dollar store, right? We're not hiring a group of five coach. And a lot of that was, you know, they tried to build up this pool of money of like, well, look at what we can pay our head coach. And the dirty secret with UCLA and USC is the fact that it's so difficult to live in LA as an assistant coach. I mean, if you make $250,000 in LA, guys, like,
it's an apartment.
That's not a lot. That's barely an apartment, in particular in the areas that you would want to live in. So, and I know that sounds like very elitist, but it's just the truth, right? Cal deals with that a little bit up in the Bay Area, Stanford as well, but Stanford can pay a little bit more. So I think that you're seeing a situation where there's a university that has paid out over $450 million worth of settlements outside of the athletic department because of the malpractice of what has gone on with some of those doctors and everything. And the president sitting there is like, listen, I'm not going to go spend 10 or 15 million more dollars on my football coach. So this is the budget that the new athletic director has to work with. All these athletic directors looked at it and they were like, I'll pass. So they hire this guy, Mike Bone, who I know really well from Colorado. He comes over from Cincinnati and everyone's like, well, that's kind of weird. And then he keeps Clay Helton and everyone's like, well, that's really weird. And if you connect the dots, everything in this sport goes back to money. Why are we playing meaningless games this week in conference championship game week? For money. It's a money grab. The Big 12 got $30 million for their game. Big 10 gets over $30 million for this game Saturday night. SEC, the same deal. Everything goes back to money, folks. Why do coaches retire early? Money. You know, it is what it is. That's the nature of the beast at this point.
And I mean, I think we see that too. If there was that report of Bob Stoops in USC, but it fell apart because of assistant coach pool money. And then you have guys that leave jobs that are seemingly happy, and you can believe that they are happy, but their assistant coaches, they keep losing them because they won't pay up the assistants, which I think Oregon State's doing the right thing in going and saying, all right, we're going to extend Jonathan Smith and we're going to go give those assistants a ton of money because you're only as good as your assistants too.
Well, there's no doubt, and your assistants are really the ones out there pounding the pavement as far as recruiting goes. They're the ones developing your players. They're the one developing your culture. You know, you set the vision, but a coach is very much a CEO, and CEOs very rarely touch every aspect of their organization. So you're exactly right. And not only that, but assistant coaches are looking for the places where they can not only get a little bit more pay, but also get a little bit more security as far as multi-year contracts. And a lot of these state schools, you know, their state legislators have said for years, and there's these antiquated laws that a university that gets any sort of public funding, you know, there's only a certain set number of multi-year contracts that that university can give across the entire university. And athletic departments have had to fight state legislators for years to try to get, you know, more multi-year contracts for their athletics department. Some of them are getting that. I don't know if that's the particular case at Oregon State, but I'm just saying, like, these are the things that go on behind the scenes in order to try to attract assistant coaches and make your place what would, from the outside, be a much more advantageous place to work.
Tonight's championship game, it's at Santa Clara. Do you like the showcase that the Pac-12 has done, 5 o'clock on a Friday night? It's going to be bad weather. Who do you like in this game, and who's the quarterback that you favor, and who's a better leader of their group?
That's a great question, man. There was a lot of good questions in there. Let me start with, like, do I like what the Pac-12 has done with this showcase? No, it's a terrible location. Nobody goes. This game needs to be in Vegas desperately. They need that more than they need their next breath of air. That's number one. It's a horrendous location. Look at they could barely sell out for the national championship game last year. I know a lot of people up there. They're great people. That's a horrendous neutral site location. I really feel bad for her. Like I said, I got really good buddies up there, but man, I tell them the same thing right to their face. Okay, let's go on into the game. I want to pick Utah, but for all week, I feel like maybe LA, well, certainly on the outside, more people are focused on what the argument is against Oklahoma versus what they need to do against Oregon. Do you get the sense that it's Oregon's sitting there is still a really good football team. They have a first-round draft pick at quarterback. The defense has more interceptions than anybody in the Pac-12. Like, this is going to be a really tough game for Utah. Utah has their only test they've lost. It was on a Friday night. Like, guys, like, it's not a shoe-in that Utah wins. I think Utah's a really good team, but I think Oregon's a really good team as well. I think this is going to be a close game. And when it comes right down to it, I believe Huntley is a little safer than with the ball, and I trust Zach Moss a little bit more in the run game. So I'm leaning towards Utah. I think it could be ugly, in particular with the weather, and that's not going to bode well for Utah if they are able to sneak out a victory, because ultimately I think it might be kind of a who looked better in their conference championship game, and that committee might lean a different direction. So I think I trust Huntley just a little bit more from a turnover standpoint, because Herbert has been a little loose with the ball, in particular in that Arizona State game. But we'll see how it goes. Gosh, this game needs to be in Vegas desperately. What are they doing? Like, get your headquarters out of San Francisco. Stop paying a premium for a location that nobody else cares about. Like, it's a bad neutral. I know they're going to, but like, they need so much help. I could do this for like pennies on the dollar for them, be a consultant and be like, hey, here's where you have failed.
Yeah, you'll only do it for like $3 million. That's like $2 million cheaper than what Larry Scott gets paid.
Larry Scott could give you some of his $5.6 million, you know?
Oh my gosh.
Oh, by the way, I'm looking at AccuWeather right now. 8 o'clock tonight. So right around the end of the game, wind gusts of 39 miles an hour in Santa Clara, California.
Beautiful. Should be great. Good TV. Luck.
Buckle up.
It'll be great.
Joel, enjoy the climate-controlled stadium you'll be in tomorrow for the Big Ten Championship.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, fellas, as always.
Are we going to get another turf repair job? Are we going to get more turf repair?
Eric Harlow, instant internet sensation. Only Gus can call turf repair guy and make it amazing.
Fantastic.
All right, Joel, thanks for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Joel.
Yeah, you got it. See you guys.
Joel Klatt, Fox Sports college football analyst. All right, went way over with him as we do every single week because this is what we do with Joel Klatt. We break early on the previous segment. We go way over in his segment, and then we go off the rails. Next on The Fan.
What in God's name are we doing?
What?
Most sports talk segments are designed to keep the average fan informed while sparking traditional debates.
I have another story that will take you off the rails.
This is not that segment.
A fungal spore.
Growing in his lungs.
It's time to get away from the games.
He choked out a mountain lion and saved his life.
And get into the most bizarre, shocking, and hilarious news stories of the day.
Do you understand that most of the country thinks that you're one of the stupidest people around right now?
It's time for Off the Rails.
Millennial dogs are like, nope.
With Dusty and Cam in the morning.
They crossed their paws and said, I'm done with it.
On 1080.
Stupid covers all genres.
The Fan.
All right, 55305 is the Better You Today text line. This is a follow-up to something we discussed yesterday. The next incarnation of frat bros that are coming down the pipeline, we've said that it is anything that ends in N.
N, anything right? That has an N.
Well, I give to you the list of 2019's most popular baby names in the United States of America.
Okay.
Brought to you by Baby Center. And this is kind of backing it up. Liam, number one. Jackson, number two.
A son.
It's in.
Noah, number three. Number four, Aiden. Number five, Grayson.
Grace.
Number six, Caden.
Caden.
So how many of the top six are we going there? We'll give four of the top six. I'm going to leave Liam out because Liam is...
Irish.
He's going to be the Ivy League.
Yeah.
What do they call them? Houses? They don't call them frats. They call them houses, like the skulls or whatever it is. But a lot of ins being in there. And then you have, here's a couple of wild cards for you. We mentioned Mason yesterday as one. That comes in at 11. Jaden comes in at 14. I've got one that'll be, it's a frat bro-y name, and we missed it. Carter. Carter's going to be a bro. Like, what's up, Carter?
I think that I'll go one further. Carter. I think that Carter is also going to be a popular sorority girl name as well.
Oh,
I've heard of girls
you're going
named
gender
Carter.
Neutral with that.
Hey, bro, did you see Carter's dating Carter?
Yep.
It's going to be that Madison Bumgarner thing.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It just got that hurt my head right there.
What did the whole Carter dating Carter thing?
Yeah. Gendered. Yeah. Yeah, the bro names are going to, it's tough. I mean, if we just went to the 1920s and named everybody like Buster and just went there.
Buster, there's nothing wrong. Where did Buster come from?
I don't know.
Buster's
that's
a nickname,
right?
That's what
you name your dog nowadays.
Buster's a nickname, right?
No, I think that's a true first name.
Oh, no, I think it was really? Hey, watch it, Buster. Like, I think it came about that
are
way.
Are we going to circle back to Mildred for the girls?
Well,
and Gladys?
My daughter has an old name, Evelyn, and that's coming back around.
Yeah, but like, you shorten it. You don't call her Evelyn.
Gretchen has come back around
Gretchen?
For girls.
Yeah.
As a more popular name. So I don't think Gertrude.
You don't
or
think
Midge.
Myrtle?
Midge is not
going
to Myrtle.
The renaissance for Myrtle is about to start.
Yeah, what's up, Mert? How you doing? By the way, Ryan coming in at 28th. Congrats, Ryan.
Thanks. Ryan.
Cameron, 46th on the list.
Deep, way down.
I have been beat out by names like Malachi, which came in at 87.
Ooh, very biblical.
Axel is in at 97. People are calling their kid Zayden, apparently. That is the 99th most popular name. Dustin, not making the list. So, I don't know. A lot of Hunters are going to be rolling around, apparently, too. That came in at 77. Maverick. What about Goose?
Yeah, Maverick. What was our philosophy on the girls? I totally
Kaylee,
forget.
Haley.
So any Lees?
The Y's, yeah.
All
Haley,
the Lees
Haley.
And the Y's.
Well, the double
Haley.
E's. Double E's
double
are very
E's,
popular.
Very popular.
Double E's.
No, we take the Y out. We're going to go double E.
Which, by the way, Bradley and I, he's an L-E-E. B-R-A-D-L-E-E. Oh. Never seen Bradley spelled like that before.
Are you kidding me? Is that a girl's name or a dude's name?
It's the starting defensive end for Utah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I was just.
Yeah.
Bradley. So if Bradley and Kaylee have Caden and Grayson together.
Here we go.
You're in for a world. You're under a lot of boat shoes.
We're on it. All right. Coming up next hour, more of your football Q&A. Get your questions in. Better You Today, text on 55305. Weekend Rather is coming up next, so always awkward, often offensive, exceedingly entertaining, right here on The Fan.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.